Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, this is the second live episode of the Amateur Traveler. Thank you for tuning in. This is going to be a very different episode today. And so if you have never listened to an episode of the Amateur Traveler, I would encourage you not to listen to this episode, or at least not as your first episode, as this is not typical. This episode was recorded using TalkShoe.com. The sound quality is not quite as good, and it was recorded as a live show answering questions from an audience that was on the internet, so not an in-person live show. I don't quite know the right terminology for that. Next week, we'll get back to our more standard, polished affair. It will be an episode on Croatia, a little bit off the beaten path in Croatia with a travel writer, Amanda Castleman, so stay tuned for that next week. But for now, here's the second live show from the Amateur Traveler.
Recorded live.
Welcome to the second live episode of the Amateur Traveler. The live episodes are always interesting for me because it's a little bit like going without a net. For those of you who haven't seen the episode, I did a video episode on my personal blog, which is chris2x.com. I did a 15-minute making of the Amateur Traveler recently, and you can see that when I normally do the show, it's very controlled. I record our guests, and Elizabeth, who is our guest on Disney World, is on today. Welcome back, Elizabeth.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
But it's a different setup this time. We're dialed into TalkShoe.com, and other people in the audience, and right now we have about 8 people or so, can ask us questions either in a chat room we're looking at. So we have Bob and Conrad, and we have a couple other guests online, and I remember one, Daryl from Maryland, is also on, and a couple other people who haven't introduced themselves just yet. And so now they've been mentioned on the Amateur Traveler, so that I hope will be a little fun for you. And what we can do in this version of the live show is we can actually take questions. So that's why I'm hoping we'll get some questions. If not, then I'm certainly capable of blathering on, and Elizabeth, I hope you will help me as well. And I'm going to throw out to the chat room or to anybody else who is calling in. We did a show recently with Elizabeth on Walt Disney World. And there are so many things we could have covered in Walt Disney World and in Disney in general. Are there any questions we didn't answer? And while people are typing that, we had some friends who were going down to Disneyland tomorrow. And they were talking to Joan, and basically it is a husband and wife and their 2 small children. Their daughter is about 6, and then they have an infant also. And he is not a big Disney fan, and he just didn't know why somebody would be a Disney fan. Great America's up here. They have better roller coasters and such. So Joan was explaining that when we went down there with our kids when they were little, we went down with my daughter was probably about 4 years old, my son about 5, and she remembers my daughter in the Disney store carefully deciding how she was going to spend her $3 or something like that that she had. And she bought a little figure of Minnie Mouse. And the next day we went to the character breakfast. I don't know if any of you have been to the character breakfast. But at the end of the character breakfast, Minnie Mouse came up to my daughter. And my daughter pulls out her little Minnie and shows her. And Minnie Minnie holds her hands over her mouth and is just so pleased that my daughter has a little Minnie Mouse and to get her pictures taken with Minnie Mouse. And at that point, I have three or four small kids at my table because my daughter is forever a fan of Disneyland. My wife is forever a fan of Disneyland. I'm forever a fan of Disneyland. So that's really kind of what our personal experience has been with how they do things differently at the park. You don't find litter there. You don't find, it's just a very different sort of thing. Okay, we've got some questions in the chat room. How much are the parks at Disney now? Elizabeth, I'll defer that one to you.
Sure. There's a lot of different ticket options that they have right now. A one day, one park, an adult ticket is about $75. And if you're looking for the ability to hop, so the next type of ticket would be a one-day park hopper, which means you could see multiple parks in one day, and that's a little bit over $100. And those both tickets include a 14-day expiration date from the day you purchased them. You can pay a little bit more and have your ticket, the expiration date, extended. It's a little bit different than they have had in the past. Years ago, they had a ticket. Once you bought it, it was good forever. Now they come with expiration dates.
Okay. And then there are still 3, 4, and 5 day park hopper passes, or have they changed that?
They do. They still offer hoppers 4, 5, and 6, 7 days. And then after 7 days, it's better just to buy an annual pass.
Oh, okay. Why? How much is an annual pass?
Gosh, it's up in the 300s.
Okay.
And that's for a non-Florida resident. Florida residents, they offer a little bit of a discount. And there's a little bit of a discount if you go to AAA.
And Daryl in the chat room, I think you've caught him a little bit by surprise with the $75. Yeah, the tickets for Disneyland are not inexpensive. And Conrad points out that the annual pass is about $1 a day. So if you do happen to be in the area and get there regularly, then that's not a bad deal. But obviously Disney, one of the reasons we talk about Disney, and there are many different podcasts and blogs and books and such on planning your Disney adventure, is it is not inexpensive. And because it's inexpensive, a lot of people want to make sure they get the most out of it. And of course, that also means they had the, what did you call it? The clipboard of... The clipboard of fun.
Mm-hmm. I guess three says I thought it was about 58 3 years ago, and it was about 58. When I first started at Disney World, which is about 10 years ago, I remember the tickets were 48, and so now we're at about 75 for one day, one park ticket. And Orlando, and I'm specifically talking about Walt Disney World Resort in Orlando, I'm not sure how much they are at Disneyland. I think they're a little bit less expensive in Disneyland out in California. This is the theme park capital of the world. I tell you, out here in Orlando, because we have SeaWorld and Universal and Disney, and they're all comfortably priced for theme parks.
And then Conrad was saying he had a similar experience that I did of trying to explain to someone at Disneyland who's never been there before. And it is a different experience. And it's one of the things that's different is Disneyland isn't all about the rides. And I think that that's something that not everyone gets. It is about the shows. It is about the parades, the small character experiences and such. And if you can't be a kid, then probably it's not for you, I would say. If you don't have within you still that 4 or 5 or 6 year old that I turn into or my wife turns into when she sees Minnie Mouse, then you know that it might not be the best match for you, especially since it is more expensive. But for you know those of us who can be, it certainly has been a fun experience. Conrad is hoping that he did a good job of explaining the magic of Disney to his friend who has never been there. And how did you explain it, Conrad? And we have pause here as we wait for anybody in the chat room to talk. Elizabeth, as you hung up last time we talked to you, did you hang up and think, boy, I really wish I had mentioned?
Yes, I did. I did, and I was really looking forward to today. just because I thought that, you know, I could add some more of my favorite kind of days at Disney, because I am an adult that doesn't have kids, and I still go to the theme parks. And there are experiences for adults, and even if you can't turn into that four-year-old or you don't think you could turn into that when you walk through the gates, I guarantee you will. Just Because as an adult going in, you're like, wow, how does this place run? I mean, from a business standpoint, it's pretty incredible how they can get, you know, all their cast members on the same page. And they really take you to another world. In the theme parks, they don't sell newspapers. They kind of take you away from reality. You're not going to see a television with the news. They take you away from reality and the way they work, how they keep the streets clean, how they, you know, how the cast members just know how to say the right things to your family to light up their faces. It's pretty incredible, even as an adult, to go to the park.
Now, there can also be some tense moments, as we talked about, from the fact that it can be a stressful day if you're trying to see everything. I actually managed to get in a fight with my brother and give him a bloody nose at Disneyland on my very first trip there. I was only 4 years old, and we were arguing about who would go first in the line at Jungle Cruise. And I did let him go first then after that. My older brother, I should point out, 3 years older than me. But so we behave better towards each other since then. But there are moments...
There are moments, I know. But it's because everyone has a high expectation. So when they get there, they want to see it and do it all. And my gosh, they're going to do it all. And that's why they have the clipboard of fun. But as an adult, I was thinking, what did I not tell you before? I love the Food and Wine Festival they have. It's usually in the fall, starts in late September and goes till November. And that's over at Epcot. And they have... as a traveler, I love countries, and they have 11 pavilions that are there throughout the year. But for the Food and Wine Festival, they bring in other different countries and set up these little mini kiosks, and you can taste food and have wine from that region. Sometimes they have local people. You know, for example, Australia is not represented throughout the year, but during the Food and Wine Festival, they are. So you can have shrimp on the Barbie. Shop some for some Australian artifacts and things like that, because they put up a little gift shop there with people that are from Australia. You know, so if you're looking at that to be another travel destination, you can talk to somebody and ask questions. So they're bringing the countries to you. And that's what I really love about the Food and Wine Festival. I just love all that wine and food. It's so good.
And Epcot really is sort of a permanent World's Fair, I think, is probably the best way to think about it, or at least the back half, the World Showcase of Epcot. So Conrad says he's been to Epcot once in 99, really enjoyed it. I first went in 1987, I want to say, which was, there were only the two parks then. There was Epcot and Disney Magic Kingdom. Sorry, I can't think of what the right names are there. So, and when do you know offhand when they added the other two main theme parks or the water parks?
Yes. Disney's Animal Kingdom is our newest, and it was opened in April of 1998.
Okay.
And then MGM Studios opened May 89, I want to say, and the water parks opened in the early 90s.
It's interesting looking at the whole history of Disney World, because I don't know how many of you are aware what happened with Disneyland, where Disneyland was obviously very successful, but it really stretched the Disney Corporation. So they bought up, you know, as much land as they could afford really at the time. And then now that whole park is ringed with hotels and restaurants and such. But most of that outside the park isn't Disney. And so when they opened up in Disney World, and they were obviously much more established, they bought a lot of land, enough that they could open up, I don't know how many more parks they could fit in there, Elizabeth. You could fit in a lot more in that space. There's just acres and acres and miles of space there in the swampland. Well, swamplands is a little unfair, but in the...
It was. And Walt Disney was smart to put it on the I-4 corridor there, which Central Florida, beautiful weather. And it's about, the property they have now, it's about twice the size of Manhattan. Only a third of Walt Disney World property has been developed. And that was Walt Disney's idea, to buy up as much land as possible. He actually did it under pseudonames. He had people buy the land for him, because if he bought it under the name Walt Disney, the price would go up. And that's exactly what happened. Word got out to the local newspaper that Mr. Disney was buying land here in Central Florida, and the land price shot up, and so he got a good deal on most of the land.
But not all of it, you're saying?
But not all of it, yes. And he did that because when you go to Disneyland out in California, you could be in the park and see the big McDonald's sign. You know, you're not far from reality there. You can still see the real world. Whereas once you hit the parking lot at Magic Kingdom, you take the monorail or the ferry over, and that was purposely done so that he could take you one step further into a fantasy world. When you give the ticket taker at the gate your ticket, it's like going to a movie. It's how Walt Disney envisioned it. And then the first thing you do when you go to the Magic Kingdom, after the ticket turnstile, there's a train, and that train is a representation of a curtain. And so the curtain opens, and then after you leave the train station, you've entered Main Street, USA, and that begins the show. And there's a cinema on Main Street, there's a city hall, and you're just taken far from reality. So even if you don't have kids, it's pretty spectacular to take a look at that.
It's interesting the number of people who actually make Disneyland or Disney World a honeymoon experience. You talk about going there without kids, but it's actually fairly popular. In fact, I think Disney even does a couple honeymoon packages. I know they do at Disneyland for that. So, yeah, definitely not just for kids.
There's a wedding pavilion there.
Well,
you can get married at Walt Disney World.
Right. And you probably did this in Florida, and I know we did this in California. Did you have grad night at the parks?
Oh, yes. Yes, we do. We still have grad night at the park.
I would think so, yeah. So we did also in, I grew up in Central California near Monterey, California, Salinas, which is an ag town. And we would get on a train in senior year of high school, and we were all dressed up. You had to be dressed up to go into Disney World for grad night, but you would buy a special ticket, and we would ride the train all day and get into the park about midnight, and then the seniors from various high schools all over the state had, and even some I think from Arizona, had the use of the park till about 8 a.m. in the morning, and then at 8 a.m. in the morning it went back to normal use, and you got, you know, went out and had some breakfast, and then we got back on a train and rode all the way back to Central California. So a little easier for you growing up in Orlando, as I recall.
It was, and it was still fun. We love grad night. And yes, it's an experience where you have to dress up, and you're there until, I think, 4 or 5 in the morning.
Yeah. Well, I think we were there till dawn, at least, or till, I think, 8 in the morning for us. And you were at Magic Kingdom or all over the parks?
No, just Magic Kingdom.
Magic Kingdom.
That's what's open. I think they do several nights. I want to say they do, like, 5 or 6 nights of grad night to get all the high school seniors in, and people still come from out of state, even in local, to that event. There's a lot of those kind of events at Walt Disney World where the park is open later. We call those hard ticket events where you would need a special ticket. Grad night would be a special ticket event. Another one that I really like, we have a Christian music night called Night of Joy, and that is in September.
Interesting. Yeah, we do that at a local theme park here, but not down at, they may do it at Disneyland also. Sorry, what's the name of the one closer to me? we talked about the difference between Disney World and Disneyland. So Disney World obviously has the 4 theme parks and then the 2 water parks. And then Disneyland, because of space, really ends up with more like a park and a half, depending on how you count California Adventure. It's doing better, but it's definitely not as popular as Disneyland, for sure. But they basically built it in the parking lot across from Disneyland and built some parking structures to give themselves some space, but are very constrained in terms of space down in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions from the chat room here? Conrad is keeping up a little bit of chatter here in terms of twittering here and about Disneyland and his experiences, but the rest of the group is a little quiet today. So I'm not sure how long we'll do the live show if it's just you and I, Elizabeth. But did you have anything else that you thought of as you got home? Like, gee, I wish I'd mentioned. Personal Disney stories.
Let me think about that one just for a second. Let me think of something really good.
I remember going to Disneyland when I was, we wouldn't get there that often because in Northern California to Southern California, and even at that time, although the tickets were less expensive, it was relatively expensive for my family. We didn't have oodles of money, no, not bags of money lying around. And so I got there when I was 4, and then I got there when I was 10, and then I got there at grad night. I've been there more times with my kids, but basically in my childhood, I was there 3 times. When I was there at 10, we were there with some cousins who had driven out from Nebraska to do Disneyland and to see California. And I remember we were, it was a warm summer day, and we had one day in the park. This was even before there were park hopper or the tickets that would let you come and go over an extended period of time, when most people just did it as the one day that you spent in Disneyland. So you didn't go back and take a nap. You didn't go back and swim in the pool. You stayed and you trooped on. And you know, by the middle of the day, you were dragging. You were 10 years old, and your cousins were anywhere from, I think we were 8 to 15 years old or something like that at the time, 8 to 13 or so. And at the time, you know, enjoying things like the Small World, which I've probably outgrown a little by now, but doing the Mad Hatter teacups until we just were so dizzy we couldn't stand up, and then having to go sit in the theater until we could regain our equilibrium.
You're never too old for It's a Small World.
So guest 3, and I think that's Daryl, if I've got the right name here, asks, I've only been to Magic Kingdom, Epcot, and MGM Disney Studios. How are the other parks?
I think Disney's Animal Kingdom is fantastic. I'll be going there next week. I have a friend coming in town, and living in Orlando, you get lots of visitors because people come to Walt Disney World.
Sure.
And when you were talking about Disney and memories, I mean, you can, Chris, it sounds like you remember every trip you've ever taken there. And I think that's what's so special about Walt Disney World and why people keep coming back, is because they remember it as a young child and they want to take their kids back. And that's why they have some of those legendary rides that are still going, because they're, you know, you went on Small World when you were little and you're going to take your children on Small World. And, you know, you've created those memories. And I was talking to a friend last week. She lived out in Washington, and she was like, oh, I remember exactly when I went to Walt Disney World. You know, we were 12, and my parents were going through a divorce, and, you know, this was kind of a trip for the kids, because we had gone through so much. And, you know, as a cast member, when you see all these people come to Walt Disney World, everyone comes, you know, for a different reason. You're celebrating a birthday, or you're taking a break. I meet lots of people that are coming down, and this is going to be their last trip to Walt Disney World, or this is their first trip to Walt Disney World. And I think that's pretty spectacular to have a place where people can come for all different reasons, all different ages. I know we keep saying it's for kids, but I can tell you lots of things as an adult. We have 99 holes of golf. There's the Cirque du Soleil show, La Nuba, which is fantastic.
Oh, that I didn't know. Okay, interesting.
So we have that over at the downtown Disney area, and they have a nightlife for adults if you're into clubs and music. They have what they call Pleasure Island for adults. So it's not always just about the kids, but there are things for kids and adults. Elizabeth, what's your favorite ride that doesn't exist anymore?
That's a great question.
Well, the first thing I can think of is Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
Oh, there's no Mr. Toad Wild Ride anymore?
Mr. Toad's Wild Ride in Fantasyland. Yes. What? That's what he says, Conrad. Yeah, gone. Sorry. That got replaced by Winnie the Pooh, The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. No, this is Disney World. I'm talking Walt Disney World. And
Disneyland, I can't remember whether it's still there. I was there recently, and I think it may have also been replaced.
I don't think it's there either.
Trying to think of other things in either Disneyland or Disney World that have been replaced. You know, certainly the old submarines. I know many people who get nostalgic about that, but from all the reports I hear, more people enjoy it at Disneyland, the new Finding Nemo ride, probably even than the original submarines. Let's see, what else is gone? The trip to Mars, the incredible shrinking... It was an incredible journey or something like that, sponsored by Monsanto at Disneyland. I actually enjoyed the rocket rods, but they broke down way too often, but they were a fun ride. a carousel of progress, yeah. Obviously. Sorry, what did we say?
In Tomorrowland over in Walt Disney World in Orlando, when I was young, I used to remember in Tomorrowland Delta Dream Flight, and it was an Omnimover type of attraction. We got on it, and it was sponsored by Delta Airlines,
uh-huh.
And it's not there anymore. Now it is Monsters, Inc. But that particular pavilion building has gone through many different attractions over the years.
Okay. And we had another question here. In terms of the other parks, one thing we haven't talked at all about is the water parks. I haven't been to the water parks in Orlando, and I happen to be a big water park fan. We just ran out of time. Do you have anything? Have you been there? Do you love them? Are they?
I love them. I love them. We have two. They're distinctively different. Typhoon Lagoon, from a water park standpoint, there's lots of shade. They have the traditional lazy river. What they do have that's really neat, I think you have to be 7 years old, they have a saltwater environment where you can get snorkels and the life jacket and swim with sharks. Now, these aren't great whites. These are little sharks and fish, and you can go on a little snorkel adventure. Really fun if you have kids and you've never been snorkeling before and you want a controlled environment. That's what I love about Typhoon. Typhoon Lagoon also boasts the largest wave pool. So
okay.
If you're into the wave pool, that's cool. They also have something really neat in the morning before the park opens. If you want to learn to surf, they have a surfing school, and you can sign up for that. It's an additional cost. And they take a couple kids, people out in the morning and teach them how to surf out there on those big waves.
Oh, interesting. Well, that would be fun. And then we had a question from Daryl. What hotels there that you like? Sorry, let me try that again. This is why I edit the show normally. What hotels do you like there, both on site or in the Disney downtown area? Now, you talked about three hotels, I think, on our episode that we did on Disney World.
Walt Disney World property, again, being that it's twice the size of Manhattan, it has lots of room. There's 22 hotels there, and they're all different price range. They have four categories, value, and you talked about the all-star music, movies, and sports. They've added the Pop Century, which if you're looking for a value price, the Pop Century, highly recommend. They have all these different decade buildings, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and nostalgic pieces from every era. Like they have this massive, huge Rubik's Cube for the 80s. And so if you're into that kind of stuff, that would be a lot of fun. Then they have the moderately priced hotels. That would mean you're a little bit closer to the theme parks, and your room size would be a little bit bigger. Deluxe would be extremely close to the theme parks, almost walking distance. And then there's a set called Home Away from Home, that if you're bringing, a lot of family members or friends, you can get villas, 1, 2, and 3-bedroom type villas and things.
Okay. And then what was the other question we had in here? Oh, there was a question about Pleasure Island. Anything semi-new in the Pleasure Island area? I think I've been there last in 2001. And again, I'll defer. I haven't been to Pleasure Island, so.
Pleasure Island is an adult entertainment-type park. I should probably word that very carefully. For guests, it's 21 and up. It's the clean version of the nightclubs. There's a comedy club. We pay one price to get into the comedy club. There's a 80s club, 70s and 80s music. It's a street party. Basically, it's a street, and it's full of different kinds of clubs, and you can go in and out of the clubs and lots of drinks and things like that. So that's fun. Sometimes they have live bands, which are fun. But it's changed a lot since it opened in the early 90s as well. When I was young and I was early teenager, we had gone up to Pleasure Island, and during the day they had a roller skating rink. They don't have that anymore. They turned it into a club. But if we're talking about nostalgia, if anybody's listening out there that remembers the roller skating rink, I love that place. I begged my parents, but let me go roller skating at Walt Disney World. Do they still have a club, the BET? Yes, they still have the BET club at Pleasure Island as well.
Black Entertainment Television is what we're doing there, BET?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you know why they got rid of the submarine ride? And what is the Nemo ride like? Oh, okay. The reason they got rid of the submarine ride, I'll just speak what I'm speaking. I'm speaking on Walt Disney World in Orlando. I think there's a lot of different reasons. I mean, I've heard lots of rumors of why they got rid of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. But if you can remember, to get into that attraction, you went through like a little porthole, like of some sort. You know, you kind of have like climb into your submarine, and they had a hard time with making the submarines fit the ADA requirements, Americans with Disabilities. And so I think that was one of the reasons why. And then they said it, lack of interest. I mean, once you got in your submarine and you went down, everything you saw was like fake. It wasn't that cool.
I think that's the biggest reason from what I've heard. Yeah. Especially the one in Disneyland. Even after they did the retrofit to the yellow submarines from the old gray ones, it's still people went down and went, gee, this just, it you know, we've now had so much exposure to special effects that this just wasn't that interesting. It really was sort of a 50s kind of ride, and so they really needed to update it. For those of you who are a fan of Disney trivia and what used to be there, I don't know if you've heard of the site yesterland.com. It's a Disneyland site featuring discontinued Disneyland attractions. So if anybody was thinking about a fan of Disneyland, as I am, and you are wondering what rides used to be there but aren't anymore, that's a great place to find that. What was the second question? Oh, what is the Nemo ride like?
The Nemo ride? Oh, I love that ride. Now, everyone has seen the movie Finding Nemo, I'm assuming. It is over at the Living Seas Pavilion at Epcot. It kind of, what I find that Disney does is, you know, they have an attraction and then sometimes they need to spruce it up a little bit to get people over there. And when Living Seas, when it opened over at Epcot, they had a ride inside and it just kind of, you got into a little car and it kind of like drove you around and you just saw the aquarium. Then they took that the ride portion out, and then you could walk around. To gain more attendance, they added Nemo. They've now partnered with Nemo, and so when you walk into the attraction, outside there's these little seagulls, and they go, mine, 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 just like the attraction, or the movie, Pixar, Finding Nemo. And then you go under the sea, and you get into a clam-mobile, and it's the same, if you can remember back to the original ride, it's the same track. It's still going to take you around the aquarium, but this time they've put Nemo inside the aquarium with all Nemo's friends. So they've used some special effects to get Nemo inside the aquarium. It is totally cute. If you have kids, you'll love it. If you've seen the movie and you like Nemo, you will love that attraction. It's really well done.
Interesting. So it's a similar thing that they did at Disneyland when they took out the people mover and still used the track then to do the rocket rods later on.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, was part of the problem with rocket rods was it wasn't a track that was built for a higher speed attraction. But is there anything like the people mover still around? When you say like the people mover, Conrad, what do you mean by like the people mover? While Conrad answers that question, it moves me around. There aren't as many things like that now. Like there used to be the sky in Disneyland. There used to be the gondola ride from one end of the park to the other. It seems like there aren't as many rides like that that are pure transportation anymore, except for the Main Street. Do you have a different comment on that?
I do. They do have in Tomorrowland the Tomorrowland Transit Authority, the TTA, and that is like a people mover. It takes you around on a little tour of Tomorrowland. And that's fantastic. They have the steam trains. Don't forget the trains go around the theme park. That's a 20-minute trip around the park, and if you want to get off, you know, in Frontierland or Toontown, that's a mode of transportation as well.
TTA, well, and we should really... If we're going to mention the trains, we should really mention that I think one of the reasons that Walt Disney built the whole park, and then obviously the second park in Florida, was he was a big fan of trains. In fact, the latest episode, or one of the latest two episodes of the official Disney podcast done by a friend of mine, Michael Gohagen, they got to interview some of the people who are still running the Disneyland trains and the private car and such, and talked about some of the history of the trains. And so if you're interested in a train fan or a Disney train fan, check out that the official Walt Disney World podcast, one of the last two episodes, because they did talk about that in great detail. It was a very good episode.
Also, if you're traveling to Walt Disney World, they have a train tour that they give in the morning before the park opens, and it would be conducted by some of the people that work on the trains, and they tell you the history and help you can help get the trains ready for the morning and things like that. So they also have a lot of tours, kind of like backstage, behind the scenes tours at Walt Disney World. If you're interested, if you're a repeat guest and you just want a new experience, you don't always have to take the VIP tour, which I recommend. They have behind-the-scenes train tours. They also have a tour if you're bringing small children called the Family Magic Tour that lasts 2 hours, and it's kind of like a scavenger hunt through the Magic Kingdom. They have a storyline, and the storyline is that, you know, Captain Hook is going to take over the Magic Kingdom, and he needs the kids' help to save the Magic Kingdom. So that's a lot of fun. Again, if you've been many times and you just want a different kind of experience, they offer tours throughout the day. They offer some tours over at Epcot, too, if you want to learn more about the history of the pavilions and the architecture. That would be interesting as well.
And those are paid tours?
They are. Okay. And you would need to book them in advance because they limit the amount of people. They also offer a Segway tour over at Epcot.
Oh, I've heard that.
Before the park opens.
Interesting. That seems like an appropriate park to do that at, with the kind of World's Fair nature of the park. Have you ever taken that, Conrad asks. Have you done this?
I have not taken the Segway tour, but I would like to one day give my VIP tours using a Segway. I think that would be very efficient.
What was the other question we had? The Tomorrowland Transportation Authority must be new. When did that open? Did you have that answer to that question?
I think it's always been there.
Oh, really?
You have to look up. It's on the second floor, so you have to look up. A lot of people don't look up when they go to the park. Remember I told you that, you know, they have their blinders on, and they said, okay, we're going to go to Space Mountain, and then after Space Mountain, we will go on Buzz Lightyear. If you're a repeat guest and you've been there a lot of times, you're like, oh, I've seen that, I've done that, take a look up on Main Street. They have windows, and they have, like, they look like advertisements of stores and things like that. There are names on those windows, and those names are not fictitious. Those names are purposely there because those were people that had some sort of influence on making the park what it is today. They could be Imagineers. They could be, presidents of the company, things like that. So,
interesting.
When you're on Main Street, take a look up to the second floor. There's always something to see. They pay such good attention to details at Walt Disney World that I think anybody would appreciate that.
And then we have the question, so how does TTA work? What kind of vehicles?
Oh, they're... Let me see. What kind of vehicles? They're blue. And I don't... And it works like, you know, a conveyor system. They're constantly moving. So they're not anything outrageously special. They're just a people mover.
So is it a... Is it a continuous loading ride?
Continuous moving ride, yes.
Okay.
On a conveyor.
And I don't know we didn't actually talk about that in terms of when you came on and talked about the show, but in terms of knowledge of how the park works, there are a number of different types of rides, and one of the things that Disney really did very well is invented rides that basically they're always moving. They don't stop. Like a different version of that, for instance, would be Space Mountain is not a continuous loading ride. The train comes in, it stops, people get off, and then people get on, and then it goes. And Dumbo is that in probably the slowest fashion. But some of the rides, like Haunted Mansion, constantly have people getting on and off. And those rides can handle a greater capacity. And so the lines can move longer. And the Unofficial Guide to Disneyland, for instance, points out estimated capacities for lights, because that's not something that Disney gives out, to the best of my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong here. But it's interesting, as you plan your day, for instance, if you've got small kids who absolutely have to do Dumbo, which, you know, I'm not sure exactly why they would, but I know some kids absolutely have to. That's a ride you might want to do early in the day, even though it isn't Space Mountain, because it will back up. You will get a line there.
That is true. If Dumbo is on your list of things to do, if you're not there when the rope drops, you know, it's just such a slow-moving kid that takes a long time to load. And you're right, they don't give out the numbers for loading, but man, Walt Disney, they can move people better than any other theme park. And I've been to a lot of theme parks. They just are consistently loading. I think Buzz Lightyear, because it is a continuously moving, I read somewhere recently that that's right now the most popular, they can experience the most attendance on Buzz Lightyear. It keeps going. It's a continuously moving vehicle.
Well, and I love Buzz Lightyear, so I'm completely with you there. But that's the that's the competitive nature in me. And for anybody who hasn't been on Buzz Lightyear, it's basically a moving shooting gallery where you are in a car and you have targets along the way that are Emperor Zurg and his minions, and you're shooting at them with your laser, and you're scoring points. And at the end, you know, for those of us who are competitive, there's bragging rights involved in terms of what your score is. And I love the fact that at the end you can email yourself the photo from you on the ride. You don't have to go and buy the photo for $10 or whatever. You can just go to the kiosks at the end and email it to yourself, which I just thought was a brilliant idea. Someone asked about, are there any new rides coming?
Oh, yes. They're always building new rides over at MGM Studios. Oh, sorry, Disney's Hollywood Studios. Name change. That's recent. They are doing a Toy Story attraction, and that's coming up. Let me put my thinking cap on first. Any other ones? I see a lot of questions.
Tower of Terror has come up. Daryl says, I admit that I haven't done it, but has anybody been brave enough to ride the Bates Hotel haunted elevator ride? So that would be the Tower of Terror is what you're referring to, which is the Night Gallery. No, sorry. What's the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror?
Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Hollywood Tower Hotel.
Hollywood Tower Hotel. And I've done it. And I think I'm with Conrad. I don't know if I would do it again. That's a ride. You're going to do that one in before lunch.
That's a really great example of an attraction that they took, and then they've kicked it up a notch. I don't know when you experienced it or when Conrad experienced it, but it used to just be one drop. You would go on it, and everybody would have the same ride experience. Now they have four different ride experiences, and you don't know what you're going to get. So when you get on that attraction, you could go and have four little drops, or you could have one gigantic drop and then a few little drops. So that's what keeps it exciting for the locals, for the people that come back year after year. And they have people like that come back year after year. Walt Disney World is their family vacation, and they have to keep things fresh and new. And one way they did that over at Tower of Terror is to add some different ride programs.
It is interesting to see how so many of the rides change over time. In Disneyland, for instance, one of the rides that's there now but is very different from when they first made it is the Matterhorn, which is obviously a very signature ride or very signature thing in Disneyland. When they opened up the park, and certainly by the time I was on it, probably when I was 10, the mountain was still hollow. It was one hollow shell, and when you were inside, somewhat like Space Mountain, except not in the dark, you could see all the different track everywhere. So there wasn't this sense of going through tunnels and the kind of claustrophobic feel that it has now. And of course, at the time, they still had the sky gondola going through from Tomorrowland, sorry, where did they go from Tomorrowland to Fantasyland? Went right through the monorail. So when you went through the mountain, you could see all the different cars from the Matterhorn zipping about you. So they updated that ride and put in the Yeti and the Abominable Snowman and all the tunnels and such later on. So they keep changing a number of rides. So, and then they do the thematic changing. We haven't talked about that, for instance, like the Haunted Mansion at Halloween. No, sorry, Christmas.
That's fantastic. You have that out in Disneyland. We don't have that out at Walt Disney World. They do a lot of ride refurbishments. Haunted Mansion here just went through one. Ours wasn't as cool, I should say, as Disneyland. I really like the way they did the Nightmare Before Christmas, or the Nightmare Before Halloween.
I didn't realize they didn't do that in Disney World, in Magic Kingdom.
No, they didn't. They didn't. But they just did an enhancement to the Haunted Mansion. They updated the sound quality. They changed some of the scenes, the Madame Leota and the seance room. And that's what they're constantly doing, keeping it fresh. But also Pirates of the Caribbean just went through a refurbishment or enhancement.
Right.
That is to go along with the movie, the Pirates of the Caribbean movies that came out. They've added a Johnny Depp animatronic, and oh my gosh, he looks so real. And they've added some of the characters from the movie, the Johnny Depp, the Captain Jack Sparrow. And that's also again brought attendance and helped keep that ride new.
Right, and certainly what was originally in Disneyland, the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse, one of my favorite Disney movies as a kid, became later on the Tarzan treehouse and was modified because that was a movie that the then generation understood better. So, yeah, they do keep changing the park.
I love Swiss Family Robinson. When I was upset that I didn't mention that before in our last episode when you said, well, what's your favorite ride? And I said, Hall of Presidents. I also love the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse, and I'm always trying to get my VIP guests to go on that. I said, have you watched the movie? And they haven't, but it's out on DVD, and I think that's just a classic Walt Disney movie. And if you're coming to Walt Disney World, you probably don't even know it's there because it's kind of hidden behind all the brush and the trees, but that would be so much fun for a family to rent that movie before they come to Walt Disney World.
So Magic Kingdom still has the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse, not the Tarzan one like Disneyland?
That's right.
I did not realize that. Okay. And Kevin Crossman from the Brat Pack podcast, and Kevin, correct me if I've got that wrong, has joined us, and he says, Halloween and Christmas for the Haunted Mansion holiday. Yeah, we talked about the changing of it, but we didn't go into a lot of detail there. From Halloween to Christmas, they take the Haunted Mansion in California in Disneyland, and they turn it into the Nightmare Before Christmas ride. So the whole thing is very different. I mean, it's still the same physical location, but instead of having dancing ghosts, you have Christmas trees and presents and such. So it is just a very different ride when you do it during that period. There's a couple different things like that, but that's probably the biggest one that changes seasonally in the California park. And now we've got so many questions here that I'm falling behind here. What is one of the most overlooked gems in the parks? I was pleased to discover the Disney Museum. Yeah, Disney Museum is now in California. That is above the Pirates of the Caribbean, as I recall. I don't know where it is in the Magic Kingdom in Orlando.
In Orlando, it's actually called One Man's Dream. And it's in Disney's Hollywood Studios. That came in with our Year of a Million... Was it the Year of a Million Dreams campaign? No, when we celebrated Walt's 100th birthday back in 2001, they instituted that museum. And it's a fantastic interpretation center. And at the end, they show you a clip, really quick movie montage of Walt Disney's life. And... I think it's fantastic.
Oh, and I've been corrected that in Disneyland, I was talking about the Disney Gallery, and that's apparently been removed for the Dream Suite. Not sure if people are aware that there's a new suite that's been designed that I don't know if you can book a reservation there. I know they've been giving them away with the Year of a Million Dreams as a prize. But apparently that's changed, and you can't get to what I was talking about, which you're right, was the Disney Gallery. Thanks for correcting me there.
We have a suite, too, over in Magic Kingdom. It's in Cinderella's castle.
Oh, okay.
And it's a green suite, and you cannot book. And so many people have tried.
Oh, sure.
And it is a prize. It's something that they're giving away.
So even the VIPs that you take through the park, they can't book the suite either?
No. And I'm talking like big-time celebrities have said, price is no object. We will pay to have our children sleep in that suite. And Disney, I respect them, that they treat everybody equally, and they say that this is only a prize. So... but it's a beautiful suite, so if you're lucky enough to have gotten chosen to be there, I hope you enjoyed it, because it's beautiful.
Well, I think we're starting to wind down here a little. Are there other questions from the chat rooms? Or, Elizabeth, do you have another favorite ride we haven't mentioned yet? Boy, we haven't even mentioned all the rides yet, so...
It would be really hard to get all those in. I have some favorite... afternoon experiences that I might want to share with you. I love going over to Epcot and listening to what I call the fake Beatles, and they have a cover band that they dress like the Beatles with the mop haircuts and the outfits, and they sing those famous British tunes, and I love eating fish and chips and sitting in the English Garden and listening to them play. There's another great band, Off Kilter, that performs at the Canada Pavilion over at Epcot. I think those are fantastic. I said there was a new parade over at Hollywood Studios, which I think is fantastic.
In Disneyland for bands, and I'm talking really corny at this point, but very fun, is Billy Hill and the Hillbillies. They've been playing there for years in the Golden Horseshoe, and they do three shows a day, and they're just silly. But they're laugh out loud silly, and generally a big favorite when I've taken people who have never been there before, but just goofy sort of things. Somebody has favorite gems in the park. One other thing that has changed in California Park is that Tom Sawyer's Island has been taken over by pirates relatively recently. I'm not sure people are aware that that's the other change that has happened with after the Pirates of the Caribbean. And so there's different things going out on the island. We never had time when I was a kid to go out on the island. So I've had to enjoy that through my kids, because when you had one day, that was just too much time to get over there and try and explore around.
Oh,
Kevin agrees the Golden Horseshoe show is great. Thanks, Kevin.
and we don't have that anymore at Walt Disney World. The Diamond Horseshoe review, we don't have that one anymore. But as far as hidden gems, I think Tom Sawyer's Island is fantastic, especially if you have young boys that need to get out their energy, because there's forts and there's tunnels to discover and secret passageways. I think the average guest gets 8 attractions in a day. So, and if you can only get 8, those are usually the most popular ones, the ones
right.
that are cool, the mountains, the traditional, it's a small world. You know, I mentioned that the Stanley Robinson treehouse is there. It's tucked away. I love the tiki birds. That was one of Walt Disney's projects that he had his hands in. I also love the Carousel of Progress over in Tomorrowland. That runs seasonally based on attendance. So if you're coming during one of the more peak times, that will be open. I love Carousel of Progress. So with Magic Kingdom having the most attractions and the average person only seeing maybe 8 attractions in one day.
Interesting.
There are a lot of little things.
We had Conrad talking about last time I was at Disneyland, some characters played Duck Duck Goose with a whole bunch of kids. I was really surprised. Is that a kind of interaction typical?
That's something new that they're starting, or at least they seem to do more of, is adding audience participation. There's a parade that they have now in the Magic Kingdom that they do several times a day, and it's meant to bring people from the street out into the parade route and to dance with the characters and to interact with the characters. One of my favorite new things over at Epcot, it's in the same pavilion as the Living Seas where there's Finding Nemo. There's something called Turtle Talk with Crush. And it's the same technology that they use also for Monsters, Inc. in Tomorrowland, where the audience looks like they're talking to the character Crush in a fish tank, and they're under the water with Crush, and they're talking using a hydrophone, but Crush is interacting with the audience. He asks the little kids, "Does anybody have a question for me?" And the little kids, their fins go up, and he says, and he calls everybody dude. "Yo, dude in the red shirt, what's your question?" And kids can ask these characters questions. And parents, they look at me and they're like, "How did they do that?" And Crush answers them. And it is a fun experience for adults and for kids, because the parents are so caught off guard about how this character is talking. And the guests are always like, "Is there somebody on the other side of that screen? How can they do that? How can he be so quick with the kids and even the adults?" Because sometimes Crush calls on the parents of the little dudes, and you will leave that attraction going, "Dude," because that's what Crush teaches you in that attraction. It is so popular that it's one of the things that I do first thing in the morning if I'm going over to Epcot with the guests, because it's a small, intimate theater, only holds 150 guests at a time, and the kids love it, the adults love it. Same kind of technology over at Monsters, Inc. in Tomorrowland, except this time the monster characters are trying to get you, the audience, to laugh, because the city of Metropolis is powered by your laughter. So they tell some really funny jokes. But while you're standing in line, and sometimes you have to wait at Walt Disney World, you can text message using your phone. So talk about integrating technology and being with it. You can text a joke to a special number, and when it's your turn to go into the theater, the monster characters sometimes pick their favorite jokes, and they may say, "Chris from California,
yeah,
you know, why did 6, 8, 7, 8, 9, you know, people love that, because now the characters are interacting with the audience.
Oh, that's
and
great.
It's more of a participation thing.
Interesting. Now, the other thing in terms of character interactions in California, and I believe not in Orlando, is Toontown. Am I correct in that?
Yes.
And Toontown, you can always find the characters. You can go into Minnie's house. Minnie is often there. You can go into Mickey's studio and see some of his movies while you wait for him and get your picture taken with Mickey. And then also in the Christmas time, you'll see Goofy will be out there as Santa Claus, and you can always find the characters in Toontown. You can usually find them other places, but that was one of the things they did with Toontown, besides it just being a goofy place where you can do Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin and Goofy's bounce house and go into Donald Duck's house. You can also have more character interactions there than they had before then. And Toontown also can get busy. So we used to go to Toontown first when we had smaller kids, first thing in the day, and then do some of those things over there very quick, get into Mickey's movie barn, I think is what it's called there. And the roller coaster, yeah, there's a real kid-size roller coaster there, which is Gadget's Go Coaster, which is fun for kids who are just starting to get into roller coaster age, probably not ready for Space Mountain yet.
That's right. Over in Toontown in Orlando, there is Goofy's Barnstormer, and it's a ride that you have to be 35 inches, and it's your first roller coaster experience, and that's a lot of fun. And to tour Minnie's house and then meet Minnie at the end, and to tour Mickey's house and meet him at the judge's tent later on, because Mickey is into gardening and remodeling. So when you walk through his house, you'll see that he's remodeling that kitchen. And I know that some of you out there have experienced remodeling, and he's been remodeling that kitchen for many, many years. And then as you walk outside, you can see Pluto's doghouse. And then Mickey is a gardener, and he grows vegetables, and they are surprisingly shaped just like his face, with the big head and the two ears. And that's a lot of fun. And yes, you can meet Mickey there. And then they have the Toontown Fair, which are all Mickey's pals, and you can get in line to meet the princess characters and some of the other fun-loving characters.
Somebody should have warned Goofy that the four most expensive words in the English language are "while we're at it." That's what always happens when you go to those remodels. So I know this because I live in a two-story house. It used to be one story, but as they say, that's another story. The going on here, and then Kevin corrects me, as does Elizabeth. So there is a Toontown, but a smaller one in Magic Kingdom, and it's Mickey's Toontown Fair. And he says there are three neighborhoods in Toontown in Disneyland, Residential, Town Square, and the Rides Right. And then Conrad asks about the Blue Bayou. Is the restaurant where you can see the pirates right from the table, right? I don't know you can see the pirates, but you can see the ride from there. Can you actually see into where the pirates are in the ride? You're on the lagoon with all the fake fireflies and such.
That's right. We don't have that here. I wish we did. But the restaurant, you can just see a little portion of the ride, but you can't see the whole thing. That's a fantastic restaurant. I think we could do a whole show on restaurants. Because,
right.
I love them. We have fantastic restaurants at Walt Disney World.
Well, and then you have Snow White's Castle. We have Sleeping Beauty's Castle, right? Have I got that in the right order? And Snow White's Castle is larger, so you have the restaurant there, which is a wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm. Cinderella's Royal Table.
Right, and as we said on the episode that we did on Walt Disney World, book months in advance. Book before you go down there.
Totally.
Monsters, Inc. at Walt Disney World or CSA, sorry. So is the Monsters, Inc. ride 3D, and how does it work? And we have.
It is not 3D. It is not 3D, and it works that they have cast members, actors, and they are in little sound booths, and they can see the guest in the audience. And they each have a character. Maybe it's Sully or Mike, some of the Monsters, Inc. characters. And they take on their personality, and they can joke with the audience because they have a camera and they can see it. And it's totally live. These are actors that are portraying it. It's totally cool.
And then we have a question. We're talking about Disney World or Disney California Adventure. And I don't know the one at Disney California Adventure. I think that is a ride. Yeah. Kevin says that's more of a traditional dark ride a la Peter Pan, but with better animatronics. But the Peter Pan ride is still fun, so.
I agree.
But it's a little more dated. It's not as technologically advanced. That's true. Well, we're coming up to an hour here, and I'm mindful of how much time people have in their iPods or in their life to listen to a longer episode. Do we have one last closing comment from you, Elizabeth?
I hope to see you at Walt Disney World. It is the vacation destination, probably one of the top vacation destinations for Americans. I was talking to my friend in Chicago last night, and she said, yep, just about everybody I know comes to Florida for their holiday. So, and it is a popular place, and I think that you'll have a really good time if you come with the kids, without the kids, whatever age you are, there's something for everybody.
The one thing in terms of that's where everybody goes, the interesting marketing research study that I heard is when, and I think it's General Mills, wanted to open their Olive Garden restaurants, not my favorite Italian restaurant, but they wanted to figure out what America liked. They figured they could do research all around the country, or smarter yet, they just opened one in Orlando because the whole country goes there. So a lot of companies are starting to take advantage of the fact that we're all going to get there eventually, and so they'll just do their market research in Orlando. Elizabeth, thanks again for coming on the show and for answering some questions. And great thanks to, especially to Daryl and Kevin and Conrad, who were more active in the chat room and provided a lot of questions. That sure made it a lot more fun than us trying to make up things here. So it apparently only takes a small number of people to make a show and put that together. But I thank you all for your participation as well. And Kevin, as we said, is another podcaster. So we'll plug Kevin's podcast is the Brat Pack podcast about movies. And thank you all for coming. I think we'll wrap up then this episode, this second live episode of The Amateur Traveler, and we'll probably try and do another one next quarter. And Elizabeth, again, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Thanks, everybody, for your questions.
Oh, and Kevin corrects me. It's the Frat Pack podcast. Sorry about that. I had the wrong name there. So, and well, thanks for listening.
One more cathedral, I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be